Okay, we're rolling. And this is a class for balance, boundaries, and nurturing yourself. I'm Kathy Kane. And I'm here today to talk about that because I am really lousy at it. And so I've had to learn the hard way, different ways about finding some balance and taking care of myself. Because one of the important things, a good share of people in the metaphysical field, whether it be Christian, pagan, different kinds of religious paths, or healers especially, a lot of us are socialized, especially women, not to diss men. Men get it too, but they get it less. But we're socialized to take care of other people. And the problem is we are so socialized to take care of other people that we forget to take care of ourselves. And so we end up burning out. And so we take care of zillions and zillions of people, and we burn ourselves out, and then we're collapsed down on the floor in a heap, weeping and really sick and that sort of thing. And saying, who's going to take care of me? And at that point, we're not in good shape to help anybody else, including ourselves. So one of the crucial things that most of us don't get is we need to find some balance. We need to find ways to nurture ourselves, both because it's appropriate to take good care of ourselves, and because it puts us in good shape to help other people too. Okay. Do you have any particular questions or issues about this that you'd like to? You just want me to talk, and that's fine. Okay. I want to make sure that when I teach, I get to whatever people are in class or interested in to make sure I'm hitting the high points there. All right. We sacrifice ourselves. We're trained to sacrifice ourselves. Women are especially trained to. We're the wives, we're the mothers, we're the nurturers. It's our job to make sure everybody is healthy and in clean clothes and happy and fulfilled and that sort of thing. And if there's any time left over after we've done that for everybody else around us within our ken, that's for us. And there never is time because there is always needs, and because nature abhors a vacuum, there will always be needs to pour in to fill that empty space. Sacrifice is raised to us as being a virtue. It's virtuous to be a giver, to be a carer, to be a philanthropist, to help others. And that's true, but it can also be a problem because too much of anything is too much of a good thing. We're raised not to be selfish. Don't be selfish. And we all translate that as, don't think of yourself. Don't take care of yourself. I had an interesting experience in another class I went to this weekend where we were talking about this situation, the Healing the Healer panel. And one of the gentlemen who was on the panel said that he'd heard all this thing about don't be selfish and that sort of thing. So he'd actually looked up selfish in the dictionary. And what he found is one definition of selfish was to be doing things without thought or awareness of the consequences. So at that point, if you are so busy taking care of everybody else that you burn yourself out and make yourself sick, that's actually a selfish act because you're doing it without thought or awareness of what you're doing. Now, this was a real eye-opener for me. I thought that was brilliant, and I'm going to have to go spend some time with my dictionary when I get home, but I thought that was the most brilliant thing I'd ever heard. There's also a problem with sacrificing yourself, because a lot of times we expect we unconsciously expect a reciprocal thing. We think, if I'm a good person, if I give and I give and I give, then when I need, other people will give to me. But the problem is, they don't always do that. A lot of times, we train people to expect us to be the person who picks up the slack all the time, as opposed to building expectations that there's a reciprocal arrangement here, and I'll help you when you're sick, and you'll help me when I'm sick type of thing. We build up an expectation that we will always go the extra mile. We will do the extra thing. We will pick up the slack. If somebody drops out, we will fill in that gaposis. And the problem is, since none of us have the red and blue long johns underneath our clothing with the big S on the chest, there will always be something that is more than we can cope with. There will always be something that's more than we can do. And if we have an unconscious or an unconscious expectation of reciprocity, that if I'm a good and caring person, when I have needs, somebody will come and fill those needs for me, and it doesn't happen, it can be devastating. It can make us very depressed, very angry, very resentful, and it can trash us on our own paths, and that's our paths of spirit, spirituality, and just in life, following our dreams. It's hard to follow your dreams when you're angry and depressed and exhausted. So, spiritual. We especially have this problem with having poor balance and sacrifice on a spiritual path. A lot of people expect that if you have spiritual gifts, if you're a reader or if you're a healer or if you have other spiritual gifts, that since it's a gift for spirit, you received it for free, so you should not be charging for it. That it's unethical to charge for that sort of thing. That's a big source of discussion and debate in the metaphysical field, because there's a whole school of people who believe that you shouldn't be charging because, you know, you got it for free. And the funny thing about that is nobody sees anything wrong with the idea if God, I'm a metaphysical Christian, so I'm going to talk God, and I don't know what your path is, but that pretty much all paths are good. If God made you a brilliant tap dancer, if he gave you rhythm and energy and all that kind of stuff, nobody would see anything wrong with you making a living as a tap dancer. If God made you a brilliant with numbers, nobody would see anything wrong with you making a living as an accountant. So there's no reason why, if God gave you the gift to be able to see beyond the five senses or do healing through energy, why you shouldn't be able to charge for that, just like you would be for accountancy or tap dancing. All right, but people get all confused about that. There's also a really big belief that money is not spiritual. If you're a spiritual person, you don't want money. You're going to want to live in an ashram and eat rice, and you won't want material things because they're not spiritual, which is a crazy thing. The truth of the matter is we all need to eat. We all need to pay our rent. We all need to have things we need to buy and things we want to buy and that sort of thing, and money can be a spiritual tool or as it needs to be. There's also a spiritual belief that pride is a vice, that if you are proud of what you're doing, if you put your own needs or expectations ahead of other people's needs or expectations, you're being overly proud, and that's a terrible, horrible thing, and you're a horrible person. So we get all these crazy beliefs, especially in the metaphysical field, that screw us all up, that tell us that we need to sacrifice ourselves, that we need to work ourselves to the bone, and then on beyond, down beyond the bone. And if we don't do that, we're a less than good person. And to be a good person, we need to do that and burn ourselves up. So we've got a lot of pressure on us to do things that are really not good for us. What sacrifice can do to you? It can give you poor self-esteem, because no matter what you do, it's never enough. It can make you depressed. It can make you bitter. It can make you burn out. And you can lose your dreams because you're so busy working on other people's stuff that you don't make any time for your own stuff. And there's also always something. We all have a life mission. We all have something that we're here to bring to the party of life that nobody else can bring. Mine's potato salad and really good brownies. So nobody else can bring it for us. And if we're so busy sacrificing our stuff, our dreams, to everybody else's dreams, our stuff never gets there. I'm not saying one needs to be selfish in the expectation that everybody else has for it. I'm not saying you should say to hell with everybody else and I will do my thing and they're just going to have to cope with it. I'm saying what we need to find in our life is balance. And balance is a really important thing to being able to both be a caring, loving, compassionate human being, but also to be caring and loving and compassionate to our own stuff. I think the remedies for sacrifice are three things: balance, boundaries, and nurturing yourself. And we're going to talk a little bit about that right now. Balance. What's balance? A lot of people think of balance and they think of like a pie chart. Okay. Well, 40% of my time will go to work and 20% goes to my family and 10% goes to my community and 20% goes to sleep and that sort of thing. And balance doesn't really work that way. People try and get that kind of balance, achieve that kind of balance in their life, and they make themselves absolutely nuts because it's impossible. There is no way that you can do it that way and actually have a literal good life. balance is something different. Balance is not a static pie chart. Balance is a living, breathing, moving, changing process. I don't know about you, but when I was little, one of the things we used to do is you'd get on the teeter-totter, and you'd stand in the middle of the teeter-totter. You put one foot on either side of it, and your feet would go up, and your feet would go down, your feet would go up, and your feet would go down, and they were very rarely exactly equally balanced. Balance is what you did to keep from falling off the teeter-totter. You rode the wave of whatever the teeter-totter was doing at the moment. If one side went up, you shifted your weight in that direction, and you bent that knee. If it went the other way, you lengthened the one knee, you shortened the other. And balance in life is like that. And so it means you need to know what your priorities are and what's important to you. And then you need to be prepared to roll with what life brings you and shift your weight so you don't fall off the teeter-totter. And that's what the balance we're looking for when we're looking for balance in life. To get the balance, you first need to know your own needs, dreams, goals. As I said, I think everyone in life has a life mission. And your life mission is something that you're here to do that nobody else can do for you, something you bring into the party of life, as I said. Your life mission may or may not have anything to do with what you do for a living, and that's okay either way. There are a lot of different ways to find your life mission, and I don't know if I've got time to go into all of that here, but your true life mission, once you know it, is going to really help you because it helps you set your priorities on what you need to be giving your time, your energy, your love, your resources to. There are a lot of different ways to find out your life mission. Some people need to spend time in nature. Sometimes people need to meditate on it. Some people need to take those little quizzes they have in magazines. Whatever way you get there, it's good. If you're interested in looking for that, if you look on the handout, I've got a couple of websites, and my second website there, www.foresight, F-O-R-E-S-I-G-H-T, your, Y-O-U-R, C-T, psychic, P-S-Y-C-H-I-C, .wordpress.com, is my business blog. And that's about 10% articles like Come and See Us at Changing Time, Changing Worlds. And the other 90% are articles where the posts are information for living in a magical world. I've got a whole series of posts there on how to different ways to find out what your life mission is and different exercises, things like that, which is more than we can do right here. But if that interests you, there's information for you. It's free, and free is good. Once you know what your life mission is, oh, just for the record, my life mission, I've decided, is that I am here to be a fairy godmother. Because everything for me that is beautiful and juicy and fantastic is about helping people find and live their best and brightest dreams. And what's that if not a fairy godmother? So I have a business card that says fairy godmother, and I have wands around my house just to remind me of who I am and what I'm here to do, and to keep me in track and keep my life, help me keep my life in balance. Once you know what your dreams are, what your goals are, what your life mission is, you need to make sure that you've got time in your schedule to sit and listen to your dreams. If you're constantly going 24 hours a day, go, 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 you have no time to sit and actually hear what you're supposed to be doing and what things would really make your heart sing and speak to what you're here to do. And a lot of times we fill our life up with busy work, especially helping other people's busy work, because it's easier than listening to the interesting and exciting and perhaps previously undone things that we are here to do. Number three, one of the priorities is you need to put yourself on your own list. We all have a to-do list and things we're doing for this person and that person and that's it and we need to get done this week. You need to put yourself on your own list. You need to make your own priorities, whether it be your life mission priorities or just stuff you're doing because it makes you happy, healthy, and in good shape to do the other stuff you need to do. You need to schedule that and make that part of your to-do list. Not something you do if you think of it, but something you actually have there, which is visible to you, and you're going to get a chance to check that off. You need to make yourself a priority. Not as in you are more important than everybody else, although to a certain extent you need to look out for you, because if you don't, who will? But you need to make treat yourself at least as nice as you do other people. If you're not treating yourself as nice as you do other people, there's sooner or later you're going to find that you don't trust yourself. I like to tell a story. There's a thing with a stewardess. When you get on an airplane, a stewardess will come out and she'll say, "Hello. In case the cabin should become depressurized, a mask will drop down out of a cabinet over your head. Place the mask over your nose and mouth and breathe deeply. If you are traveling with a small child, please place the mask on the small child before you place it on yourself. Thank you." Why did she say that? Because she knows that people like me, and presumably you, we're going to place a mask on the small child first, and then the guy who's sitting in back of us, and then the guy who's three seats up on the left, and we're going to pass out from lack of oxygen in the middle of the aisle, and people are going to be kicking us in the ribs on the way to the exit. In life, as on the airplane, we need to remember to put the mask on ourselves first, because it's a beautiful, unique gesture of respect for ourselves as beautiful children of the universe. And it also keeps us in good shape to help other people. So win-win. You need to keep your balance. You need to give yourself some wiggle room. A lot of times we're all mega scheduling. We're trying to embrace each shining hour and make every minute count. And a lot of times we do not leave time open for serendipity. And serendipity is when beautiful things just pop right up, but if we have no time, no energy, not the resources we need to deal with them, we can't take advantage of them. So if there's a beautiful sunset, you want to be able to stop for 15 minutes and watch it, because it's going to make your soul sing and you'll be in better shape for doing other things. If you have a chance to take a class, if you're a painter and you have a chance to take a class that will really improve your technique, you want to have enough wiggle room so that you can open up time to take that class or give yourself extra time to paint. You want to make sure that you're not so hyper-scheduled that you have no flexibility to keep your balance if you need to move in an unexpected situation. Boundaries. Now, one of the problems, especially if we are not taking care of ourselves, if we're busy nurturing everybody else, is people have a tendency to overrun our boundaries. People tend to think, well, she's always done everything for me, so of course if I have any problems, I will bring it to her and she will fix everything. They don't necessarily, especially if we've trained them to think this way, they don't necessarily think about, do you have the time to do it? Do you have the energy to do it? Would you really rather be painting or writing music or, you know, solving diphtheria, whatever you're here to do. So we have to take responsibility for ourselves for setting good boundaries, for not letting people walk all over us or take advantage of us or suck up all of our time so that we don't have any time to keep that balance to also treat ourselves nice. People will, if you give away yourself totally, every piece of yourself, people will expect that. And while they may appreciate that, they're not necessarily going to understand that you need some time for you. So you need to take responsibility for that yourself. You need to learn how to say no. First, you need to know how much time you have, how much time, how much energy, how much resources, money, food, other things. So you know what you need for yourself and what you can spare. And maybe this week you can spare a couple hours, and next week you're not feeling so good. So you maybe need to take, you can't spare as much time because you need more time to be home in bed drinking tea and reading trashy magazines, because that's what makes you feel better. So you need to know how much you can give without starving yourself to death in the process. So you have a finger on that, so you know when on beyond your feelings, which your feelings are also a valid thing for this, but so you know when you have to say no, when it's important to say no rather than throw your balance off. You need to know how to say no. And a lot of people don't know how to say that. A lot of us need to work really hard on learning how to say no. No, no, no. Thank you for thinking of me, but no. I really appreciate the honor, but no. And sometimes you actually need to get down and practice it, because you're so out of practice in saying no that your no quickly becomes yes. And if you don't have that no, you will end up getting talked into all manner of stuff that you really regret in the process, and you have nothing left for yourself. You need to expect respect. If you do not expect that you will be treated with respect, and if you do not act like you're going to be treated with respect, people won't see it as being necessary to treat you with respect. So, and sometimes it's outright rudeness, and sometimes it's just people forgetting to say thank you. Sometimes it's people forgetting that, yeah, you've got a life of your own, and yes, you're a painter, and it's important for you to have time to paint, and no, that's not just your thing, that thing you can do that you can give up because they need you more right now. You need to expect that you're going to be treated with respect before you'll be able to set those boundaries and teach people to treat you with respect. You need to also teach yourself not to be embarrassed to say this is okay and this is not. There's a lot of times where we want to do things that would really nurture our spirit, but we're embarrassed to say, I'm sorry, I can't help you move right now. I'm working on my book, and I really need to be putting some time in on that. Or I'm painting. Or I'm learning to dance the frug, because that really makes me happy and healthy and feel really good about myself. And sometimes the things that we want to do that really are important to us, they sound kind of silly. And we need to be able to live with the idea, if it sounds silly to them, that's too bad. We need to not let embarrassment keep us from asking for what we not and saying, yes, this is what I need, and I'm holding to it. When you set boundaries, a lot of times we have the expectation, but they should just know that I need that time. You know, they should know better than to ask me for this outrageous, over-the-top thing. They should know I'm swamped right now and I don't have the time and the energy to do this. Truth of the matter is, people are not mind readers. And even people who are mind readers are not necessarily going to go out and read your mind. I'm speaking as a mind reader myself. I try and avoid it unless I'm invited, because it's impolite. My mother raised me not to go through other people's medicine cabinets, and I don't go through their minds either unless I ask me to. You have to set boundaries, and even if you have expectations of, well, they should just know better than to ask me, or they should know that this is the wrong thing to ask and that sort of thing, you need to prepare yourself with the expectation that you may just have to say this, even if it would be reasonable common sense for them to know that this is too much to ask for. It's amazing how uncommon common sense is. And there are points at which you need to be able to differentiate between real friends and false ones. Some friends are real, genuine, true friends, and there's a mutual respect type of thing there. Some friends are real friends, but they're high maintenance. And then some friends aren't really real friends at all. They're the ones that just show up when they need something from you. And you need to be able to sort out which is which. People who really care about you, if you're willing to actually set some boundaries, and once they understand that you really mean it, they will respect your boundaries even if they don't get them. I don't know why you need to spend 3 hours a day painting or dancing the frug, as the case may be. But okay, you're my friend. I get that. I get that it's necessary, even if I don't understand why. Those who don't respect your time, your boundaries, sometimes just need more time, because you've spent a lot of years training them that you don't have those boundaries, and now it's something new for them. And habits die hard. Some of them, though, are bogus friends. And when you set boundaries, all they're going to do is try and run over the top of them, because what they want what they want, which is understandable. It's human. And everybody wants what they want. And if just talking to you will get you to back down on the boundaries, why shouldn't they, you know? If you've got people, though, that don't respect your boundaries, that are constantly taking, or that just emotionally are high maintenance and drain you all the time so you can't do the stuff you need to do to stay strong and healthy in body, mind, and spirit, you may need to limit your contact with them. You may need to say, I'm only going to talk to this person so much. or I'm only going to talk to this person. Today I'm feeling sick and exhausted, and I know I can't handle talking to them. I will put off calling her back till later this week when I'm in a little better shape and I can afford the energy drain. And in extreme cases, you may even have to slide those people gently out of your life. If they're constantly taking and kicking up a fuss, if you won't give them everything you've got, maybe they're not really your friends, you know? So, sometimes you may need what are called energetic shields. And for some people who are energetically sensitive, people who are takers can kind of siphon your energy like energy vampire type of things. And you get off the phone with this particular person, you say, oh my God, I'm always exhausted when I get off the phone with her. There are things called energetic shields, which is just a technique for building, in effect, an energetic force field around you so people can't siphon your energy. We don't have really time to go into that here, but there's also articles on the blog about that, too, if that becomes of interest to you. And that can help you deal with the people who are the vampires better. Either that, or once again, you may need to control your contact with them. And when you're setting boundaries, you also need to give it time. Old habits die really hard. And if somebody has got years and years and years of expecting you to always be there to give them everything that they need, and now you're saying, okay, the store is closed, I can only give you so much and that's it, it's going to take them a while to adjust to this concept and remember that it is in the case. And they will probably continue to test it for a little bit because they're kind of hoping against hope that you didn't really mean it. Once you've got those boundaries, once you've said only this much, you cut yourself some slack, you make yourself some space to nurture yourself, and that's important. First, talking about validation. One of the best things we can do for ourselves is validate ourselves, which is basically finding evidence that says that what we are doing is wonderful and important and fantastic and worthwhile. There's a couple kinds of validation. There's external validation, which is when other people give you praise and strokes. And there's internal validation. Most people go around looking for external validation, but the best kind of validation is internal validation. External is great, but internal is better because it's more reliable. You can choose to find joy and satisfaction in what you're doing, whether it's writing a symphony or cleaning out a kitchen cabinet. And if you're giving yourself praise and strokes, that good energy will help you, give you the energy to write another symphony or clean out another cabinet, as it were. Other people may or may not notice. And if you've done a lot of work, you may lose track of your dreams, whatever your dreams may be, because you're not getting the feedback that this is valid and inappropriate. So I'd say the best thing you can do for yourself is develop positive self-talk, where you become your own best cheerleader. And once again, this would go into the selfish, self-centered, vain kind of territory. But it's okay, because doing that will give you the strength to do great things. Whereas if you wait around for somebody else to notice that you've done a great thing, they may do it right away. They may never notice. If you're validating yourself to a certain extent, what you're doing is you're taking responsibility for your own happiness. You're choosing to do the things that fulfill your life mission, that make you happy, that make you healthy in body, mind, and spirit. And you're not waiting for somebody else to come along and give you your happily ever after. You're making your own happily ever after. And then if other people come along and say, yeah, it's great what you're doing, or gosh, we love it, and that sort of thing, that's the icing on the cake. And we all know icing is delicious, but good cake is important too. It's important when you're nurturing yourself, you need to figure out what nurtures you. A lot of times we get so out of the habit of taking care of ourselves and doing things that are loving and caring and positive for ourselves that when we have a spare moment, we stand there going, I don't know what to do. What can I do that will make me feel good? And then the moment passes, it's gone. I think it's really important to make a list for yourself of all different kinds of things that help you to feel happy, successful, fulfilled, good. And different kinds of things are important. I have, for example, I have a body balm which comes from the body shop, which is scented like caramel. And when I rub it on my hands, not only do my hands get moisturized, but the smell makes me happy. I was at one point so pathetic that I actually had to write in my day runner every day, put on hand lotion. And that, I tell that story on myself because that's an example of the lengths you sometimes need to go to give yourself a prompt to do those things. So simple, so easy, such a consistent response, and I still would forget to do it unless because everybody else's stuff was pulling on me. You need a list of things that will help you remember easily so that you're more likely to do those things, and you need to keep it in a place that's easily accessible where you can find it. In your day runner, tape next to your mirror, whatever floats your boat. For a while, I used to have index cards that said breathe that were taped to my dashboard in my car just because it would remind me to take a nice deep breath and relax and release stress. And simple things like that can really help get you on the track of doing that. There's a really groovy book out if you've forgotten how to nurture yourself. It's called The Woman's Comfort Book by Jennifer Loudon, Loudon, and it is a wonderful book. It has all kinds of different ways to nurture yourself, from little simple things like putting on hand lotion that take 1 minute to things that can take a year of your life. And she's got it broken down by all different topics. She's even got a chart in the center that says things like, if you're feeling anxious, try these pages. If you're feeling burnt out, try these pages. Her theory, which I think is really sound, is we're socialized to take care of other people that we forget how to take care of ourselves, and we don't know what to do when we have that time. So this gives you a lot of examples to pick from so you can get yourself back on track. I recommend it very strongly. I recommend also that you do take, when you're having a good day, because everybody has good days and bad days, when you're feeling good, sit down for 15 minutes, make a list of things that make you happy, and keep it. You want to set up your environment to be nurturing to you. You need to make it easy to nurture yourself. So that body butter I was talking about, I needed to buy it, keep it in the house, and keep it in the front of the cabinet, where I knew where it was and where I could just reach right in and get it. I try and buy stamps that make me feel happy. I try and have my place where I do my writing set up so that I can just sit right down and start writing. I think if you have to spend 20 minutes putting things away and clearing a space so that you can do that thing that makes you feel happy, you're less likely to do it. If you need to go out to the store and buy something, every time you want to do something that makes you happy, you're less likely to do it. So you have the makings for the chocolate chip cookies in the house. You have the area of your bedroom set up so that you have access to whatever lotion or scent or toiletry makes you happy. You have your seating space set up so you've got a book that really makes you happy right at hand. And if you've got the environment set up to encourage you to nurture yourself, to make it easy, you're more likely to do it. There's an author called Alexandra Stoddard. She does a lot of stuff on design. And one of the things she says is that most of us put like 90% of our resources into making maybe 1% of our time absolutely fabulous. And what, so you save up all year to go on vacation. And what she finds actually works better.
Did you end up recording?
Yes, I'm still recording. And so what she finds actually works better is if you spread your resources out on things, smaller things that will make you happy throughout the year. Pretty stamps, flowers, a can opener that's a pretty color that works really well. This is actually going to give you better quality of life than an extravagant over-the-top vacation. And she really, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, in choosing to have, like I said, the pretty stamps or the chair that's really comfortable or the slippers that make you feel good every time you put them on. Giving some thought to how your environment supports your self-nurturing really makes it easier and makes it happen more. it's good to put self-nurturing in your routine, to make a habit of self-nurturing. So once again, have that lotion or that body balm, and you make it part of your evening routine. You brush your teeth and you moisturize your hands, type of thing, to build a habit. I come home and I spend 15 minutes reading a book that really makes me feel enlightened or uplifted. To build those habits that, once again, encourage taking care of yourself and nurturing yourself will put you in a better place. You need to listen to your body. Your body, a lot of times, is going to tell you if you are not doing a good enough job nurturing yourself, or if you need more nurturing. Because sometimes it's just you need to step it up a little bit because you're not doing enough good enough job. But a lot of times it's just because life is a little more trying right now, and you need an extra little extra bit of loving. So if you're finding you're beginning to get aches and pains and you're snuffling more and you're coming down with a cold and that sort of thing, sometimes it's just you've caught something. But sometimes it's a wake-up call that you need to pay attention and you need to treat yourself with some more love. You need some extra sleep. You need to do some couch potato time. You need to say, okay, it would be really virtuous for me to go to that meeting, but I'm going to blow it off and stay home and watch cartoons. Because whatever floats you, sometimes your body needs a little extra help. And your body's going to give you a message. You also need to be prepared with all the amazing things you're trying to accomplish. If you get into an emergency, what can you throw off the back of the sleigh? In classic stories, the Russians used to drive in sledges through the snowy woods, and the wolves would chase them. And sometimes they would have to think about what were they going to throw off the back of the sleigh so they could go a little bit faster, and the wolves would take that, but not take everything. Sometimes in life, we have a whole bunch of things on our list, and we sometimes need to throw something off the back of the sleigh and say, okay, that's not going to get done. Or that's not going to get done this week because I just don't have it in me. And there's no harm, no foul in that. Sometimes that's how it is to stay on top of the teeter-totter. You need to pay attention and notice what works and what doesn't. Because a lot of times we do things that we think would be really good for us and healthy for us and happy for us. And sometimes what we're actually doing is what Mike Dooley calls the dreaded shoulds. This should be healthy for me. I should be working out for half an hour or three times a week. I should be doing this. I should be doing. And maybe, maybe not. If your body is not happy, if something is supposed to make you happy and it's not making you happy, it's time to reevaluate. And a lot of times we can continue doing stuff that we think would make us happy, which actually is not that happy a thing. We need to make sure that we're paying attention for what's working, what's not, and then revise. If it's not working, get it the heck out of here and bring something in that does. Finally, we need to pay attention and remember that while helping other people is lovely, you and I are both also beautiful, unique children of the universe, that we're of value, that we count too, and that our well-being counts. And when we nurture ourselves, we are being respectful for the unique place we have in the universe. If you have your balance, if you have your boundaries, and if you're nurturing yourself, that's going to keep you in good shape, in body, mind, and spirit, to not only pursue your dreams, but also help other people. And that's a win-win situation. Any questions?
I don't think so.
And a little bit to think about there?
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Okay, I'm going to hit the little button. Oh, that was pretty good.